Hey guys, welcome to the MMA show. Today is in a very, very, very important show. I want you to like, share, subscribe, rumble, whatever it is on today's show because we're going to talk to a man who was on the brink of death, okay, and then was able to walk out of the hospital. And I think his story is super important because there's people you know that have been in the hospital who either died or is in the hospital right now and you could save their life. That's why this show is super important. But before we get started, I want you to make sure you always check the links below in the description. Always check my description every single time for every show. I always put resources in there for you. Also, I want you to go on to my brand new website, theamermayshow.com. Check the resource tab. If you're an employer and you're not requiring the jab, I want you to go and email me. Let me know because there's a form there. Let me know what jobs you have to offer because people really need work right now. And you can work with me. If you already emailed me in the past and I didn't respond to you, email me again. I've been having a little issues. I think we figured it out with the email. So email me again. But I'd love for you to work with me. And what we do is we help people and businesses save money in sustainable tax-free retirement where their money never goes into reverse. And right now, the stock market's crazy, and you might be losing some money. So let's stop the bleed. Come talk to me, and we can fix that. And we also help people if they become ill or injured, just like our gentleman here. We can be helping bringing money in while you recover. So if you want to help people, message me. We don't require the jab. If you want to keep your money and not lose your money, message me and we'll talk more about that. But cancel culture is here, guys. Christmas is around the corner, and MyPillow wants to save you the money by because the box stores cut them out, and so they're going to pass the savings on to you. Buy someone the gift of sleep, and right now you can get a classic MyPillow for $19.98, regularly priced $69.98 with promo code Amber. Oh, if you're going to be hosting this season, you got to go get the towels because everybody needs a good set of towels while they're hosting their friends and family. And their towels are the super softest towels I've ever had, and they actually work. And right now you can get them at a very low price of $39 versus $109. So jump on it now with promo code Amber. Hey, we're going to be talking about hospitals. We're going to be talking about COVID. We're going to be talking about all the things. And we want to help you prevent going to the hospital. So let's prevent that now. Go to drstellamd.com. Use promo code AmberMay, one word. Save yourself some money. Set up a telemed appointment. Get that ivermectin. Go get her Covivites right now. Support your immune system. Let's be proactive. Get your prophylactics. Go right now to her website, drstellamd.com. Promo code AmberMay, and you save some money. Okay, we got all the housekeeping stuff out of the way. Also, want to let you know we have our Telegram channel, AZ Supermoms. So if you want to reach Sarah after the program, you can find her at AZ Supermoms. Sarah, Bob, welcome to the program. What you have to offer my listeners, my viewers, is incredible information because you, sir, were the lucky ones to walk away. I was talking to Sarah. I said, you are lucky that you still have a dad because I do not. And I blame it on the ineptitude right now of physicians at the hospital because they're blindsided by one disease and one disease only. I think my dad could still be alive today if they weren't so hyper-focused on one virus. So this story to me means a lot because Sarah gets to keep her dad where I did not get to keep my dad. He didn't die from COVID. He was a transplant patient. And I feel like I always have to specify not COVID death because I feel like that's all we're hearing are COVID, 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 COVID. We don't hear about anything else. And so, Sarah, I'm so blessed that your dad gets to speak with us. He walked out of the hospital. How about you two? I don't know who wants to go first, or you might end up sharing the, as one tells the story, the other one jumps in. You have different perspectives. Tell us the journey you've been on recently.
Okay.
So take it away.
All right. Well, again, thank you for having us on. I definitely want to share the story because it's so sad that I mean I've just talked to many families, loved ones, and dealing with this is tough. And so I definitely want to try and be an advocate for anybody that needs the help. Definitely got thrown in that role of, hey, I have to be that patient advocate for my dad right now. So I can definitely kind of take you through the story, the events that kind of happened, and I'll try to, I mean, it could be something for 2 hours, but I'll try to kind of condense it down to the important things I want people to know about. So I kind of was just giving, writing down a timeline. My dad ended up getting COVID, I as well, And it was back in July. And he, you know, was just taking, it was taking him a little bit hard. It was a little harder for him. And so it ended up on July 29th. Well, actually 2 days before, he ended up in the hospital and they said, you're good. They took an x-ray. They discharged him. They didn't even admit him. And so 2 days later, his oxygen levels were just so low. And at that point,
let me stop you right there. When he went into the hospital, what was his complaints? And did they offer anything with those complaints?
I had a severe cough that was, I couldn't breathe. And all they gave me was some little
cough suppressant.
Yeah, pills.
Cough little, suppressant.
Yeah, and sent me home. Hmm. And they said,
"That's it."
And yeah. I couldn't breathe. So instead of going to the emergency, I went to the fire department because I didn't know what else to do. And they took my saturation level was still 93, but I couldn't breathe. And so I told my wife about 7, 8 o'clock at night, I said, I got to go to the emergency because I don't know what's going on. I was very, very healthy. I had no underlying illnesses. I was in good shape. I was strong, but I was having some problems. So we took me to emergency at the hospital, and then they put me in immediately put me into a
COVID ward.
Yeah, COVID
ward. That's when
ward.
They, you know.
That was the last time I saw anybody for 35 days.
No, it was 45 days.
45 days. They never saw another person besides a nurse. They wouldn't let Sarah or my wife or any of my kids. Never saw anybody. But that's kind of the timeline for me. I couldn't breathe.
So, yeah, he got in there and they immediately admitted him, got him started. He started on only 2 liters of oxygen. So I was like, okay, he's all right.
Let me ask you this. Did you have to wear a mask? You can't breathe, you're on oxygen, and were you forced to wear a mask?
Yes.
I interviewed Jody O'Malley. She's a nurse. She's a whistleblower. She was a federal nurse. And she was like dumbfounded why they were forcing patients who couldn't breathe, making them wear the mask and still on oxygen. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I feel like all these points really tell the whole story. And it backs up everything that our medical professionals that are standing up and saying, this isn't right. Your story backs up everything that they've been telling us all along. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I might continue because I think some of these points really need to get heard and told so people can fight for their loved ones. So, okay. So he's on 2 liters of oxygen.
And just to back up on that whole mask thing, this is even crazier. He's in rehab. So he's walking now. He's doing better. He's only on a little bit of oxygen after going through everything. And he's doing his exercises, trying to get back in good health. And they continue to make him wear a mask.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't breathe. And
exactly.
I'm like, it's so we'll get into that, but I just back up on that. But so he's on 2 liters of oxygen. And I get a text and he says, they're starting me on remdesivir. And at the point, I didn't know. I mean, we knew a little bit about ivermectin. We actually finally got a prescription. But at that point, he had it for 2 days, but he was on the lowest amount. And through the research now, we realized when they get to a certain point, you have to double or even triple the normal dosage. And so by the time he got in, we brought the ivermectin and they said, no, they won't let him continue his prescription.
It's not protocol.
So we did not get to continue that.
But you did not know anything yet about remdesivir.
No, didn't. Huh.
This is where a lot of people stand is when you walked in and they told you can't have ivermectin, we're going to give you remdesivir. This is where a lot of people have no clue what it does. Okay. Did he had his ivermectin prescription before the hospital? Yeah. Okay. And did you take any doses before the hospital?
I think he had two.
2 days.
2 days.
That might have saved your life, sir. That might have saved your life.
Well, I wanted to continue it, but they absolutely said no. They wouldn't honor it. And I had the prescription. I had the medicine.
It prescribed by a doctor. It wasn't the horse dewormer. It was human grade ivermectin. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they said no. We're going to do the
remdesivir.
And I said, okay, what is that? And they go, that this will help you get better. And I said, well, you know, if that's the case, I didn't know anything about it. So I said, okay. And immediately they started shooting that in my stomach.
And he said it was very painful. You said you were really sick when you did it.
I did. Yeah.
He said it made him very sick. He would call me and he just been so much pain, stomach pain. And, you know, at that point I was like, well, hopefully this helps you. And then after that, it continued to where he went from 2 liters, then 6 liters. Then he was on high flow. And then I was like, okay, well, you're on high flow now, which I said, okay, mom, I get involved. Because at that point she was talking to the doctors and the nurses. I said, this isn't looking good. And we actually, what we would do is, he was on the second floor of the hospital. We would go down to the hospital and he would look out at us out the window and we'd wave to him, put it on speaker. I mean, and he was, within the first couple of days, you were getting pretty depressed.
Well, yeah, I was there 5 days. They kept upping my oxygen level, the oxygen. And pretty soon I was on the CPAP. And then they said, we can't do this anymore.
Well, then at that point, he was on it for about 5 days. And then they said, hey.
On the CPAP for 5 days?
Well, no, the oxygen. And then you went to the high flow. And then CPAP for a couple of days. And BiPAP.
How long was the progression? Okay, how fast did the progression go where you were upping on your oxygen?
Days, 1 day, 2 days.
As soon as the remdesivir started. I don't know if there's any correlation to that, but it was as soon as that started, I was like, why isn't this helping? It seems like it's making you worse. Ever since he got into the hospital, he kept getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, I never got any better. And they asked me a lot of stuff, but I was kind of, be honest with you, I was kind of fog brain. You know, I didn't have, I wasn't thinking clearly. I don't know if it was residue or just too much oxygen. I think they were giving me too much oxygen, you know.
And this is one thing that I found, two things. This is why I push people that they need to have a plan. You need to have a plan. You never think you're going to need to go to the hospital. You don't. It just doesn't. I mean, my dad's healthy. I was like, you get COVID. I kept telling him, I'm like, you're fine. Just time. I think you're going to have to go. And if you do, you need to have a plan. You need to have a patient advocate. They can't think for themselves. Mm-hmm. They're not there.
This is where I'm mad as hell with the medical system, because that right there, just not having a patient advocate, is killing people. Just that alone. Because what your dad said, he couldn't make an informed consent decision. When you're sick, when you're really sick, you do not think clearly. You're not making good decisions. They put you on medication and you are not able to have an informed consent. And that's what makes me so angry, that it's like a prison. Did you guys, when I lost my best friend, when I was going through things with my dad, I felt like the hospital was more like a prison than a place to get better. Did you guys ever feel that way?
Not at the beginning. We thought that was the answer. But again, I've never been in a hospital in my whole life. So this was all new to me. And I think we all thought this was the best thing. But after a week or two, we realized, or they did, that things were not.
It wasn't looking good. And I mean, that first day he got put in the hospital, I actually went down there and I said, I want to see my dad. And I had 3 security guards out there, said, you're not going in there. I said, look, I'll sign something. I'll do whatever I need to do. I mean, every time I came there, we went to the hospital a lot, even though we couldn't see him. And every single time there was a security guard there. And so it was like a prison. We brought him food. And, you know, we tried to bring we got a poster board with a bunch of trying to give him some hope. But I mean, it just, everything since the hospital, everything that happened once he got to the hospital, it got worse. I mean, we're not even touching the tip of the iceberg of what's happened. I'll definitely try to push more, but
I think human contact would have been a good remedy for me. But all I answered to was nurse, and very rarely I even saw the doctor. Doctor never even came in.
And they come in full PPO, like all that gear. It's kind of scared. You're like,
yeah, hazmat. I mean, I felt like I was
like the bubonic plague or something. It's sad. And like, we wanted a, didn't we try to get you in like a pastor or like a, they said he could chaplain. He could stand in front of the door. He couldn't even go in the room.
Yeah. He could talk through the door, but
And we were
but again,
to get
this
somebody.
Is all foggy to me. I mean, this is
he doesn't remember a lot. So back to this, he was on the CPAP, and then I get a call from the doctor, and he goes, "Hey, look, this was a very small hospital, so they only had 2 ICU rooms. I think a total of 6 rooms, and I 6 ICU rooms, 2 for COVID, I believe." And he said, "Look, we have some people down in the ICU for COVID that are actually doing pretty good. Your dad's kind of using, you know, a pretty good amount of oxygen. We think it might be good for us just to move him down there so that we can just monitor him a little better, but don't worry, he's okay." And so we say, okay, well, that's good. So that was about a week after he got there. So he got there on July 29th, August 6th, he went to the ICU. So he gets to the ICU, and at that point, we can no longer see him through the window because he's now in a new room. And we were told we could, but then you get a new doctor every 2 days. So you never talk to the same person. So we get this new doctor says, no, there's like this barrier that you guys can't get through. So we can't see him. So he's there for, you know, he gets there in the afternoon of the 6th. He gets through that night. The next day, my mom calls me and she goes, "Sarah, I don't know what's going on. Your dad just called and said, I'm going to die. I just want you to know I'm okay. I'm at peace with it. I'll be with God. Just tell the kids I love them." And I'm like, "What's going on?" She's like, "I don't know. I'm going to call the nurse." So she calls the nurse. I dad and I'm like, "Dad, what is going on? You're going to be okay." He's like, "No, I'm not." He's angry at this point. Like, "You need to promise me that they're going to put me on this ventilator. And if I'm brain dead, do not let me, like, I don't want to live." I'm like, "Dad, you're okay." He's like, "You promise me I'm brain dead, you're not going to keep me alive." And I'm like, "Okay, yeah, I promise, but you'll be okay."
You know, the ventilator, I always heard terrible things about it. So when I went, when they said, "We have no other choice to put you on a vent," I freaked out because they didn't explain what it was. I have no idea. And, "Or you're going to die." You know?
Well, and it wasn't even like, this is what happened. My mom calls me back when she said, she talked to the nurse. The nurse goes, "Well, the doctor was just in and just was explaining to him about the vent and that might be the next step, but he's doing pretty good. So I think he's just being dramatic."
Did anyone talk to him about budesonide?
No.
See, budesonide is an amazing drug that's been helping people get off oxygen, prevent them from getting on ventilators. I don't know for sure. Don't quote me on this. But there might have been people who got off ventilators with budesonide. I don't know if I heard that correctly, but I know budesonide was helping people get off the oxygen and recovering, because these doctors are putting the fear of death in the families. It's like they forgot their collective brains. Like, it's like they forgot how to be doctors, because the CDC and the FDA just told them this is how it's going to be and they're going to just die. So just let the family tell them, just tell the family they're going to die. It's like, it's like this. I can't even explain when I'm hearing the story and I'm hearing other people, I'm hearing physicians. I can't even explain why none of them recommended budesonide for your father. Budesonide, it helps with inflammation. Mm-hmm. And budesonide is a very, it's a drug that's not too hard on the body. So if they would have given him ivermectin and budesonide, he would have been out of the hospital. But instead, they separate you from your loved ones. You're foggy. They don't know what's going on. They're at the will of the doctor and the nurse. They're not getting the full scope. Now you feel like you're dying. They've already talked about ventilation. And I'm getting angry right now because I guess I'm getting angry because there's people like me who lost their loved ones and they didn't need to lose their loved ones. It's just they didn't know any better.
And that's, I'll be honest, that's why I actually started. I am not technically savvy. I'm not good with any of that stuff, but I needed to get the word out. And I started, it's a super small support group on Facebook, just because I wanted to, one, my dad and all of our family and friends and, you know, up to date with everything. And then just start sharing our story because of everything that happened. I'm like, this is not okay.
I'm surprised Facebook would let you share your story. They've been,
I tried to use different words and I've still gotten a lot blocked. But through just that, I have literally probably 10 to 12 people I've talked to and worked with. And, the budesonide is something, and I had to become an expert on everything overnight. As soon as my father went on the vent, I knew I needed to be an expert. But I have been sharing with people to look into budesonide breathing treatments, especially if when they're on the vent, because a lot of these people, they found me once they've already been, their loved ones is on a vent already.
Okay, so I was correct that you can take it on a vent.
I believe you can do it. It's a budesonide treatment.
I think so too, but I just don't ever want to give misinformation out. But that's, I think I remember that. I definitely know beforehand. But there, I feel like I've heard that, so check into that, guys.
Even after, I got him some budesonide nasal spray, even once he was off the vent, because that can help with the inflammation and other things. But so, yeah, I became an expert very quickly.
So your dad is telling you he's going to die, and you're like, no, Dad, you're not going to die. Then what happened?
The nurse says, okay, he's just being dramatic. So we're like, okay, we're fine. And so 3 hours later, we get a FaceTime. First off, one thing you need to know is this whole time he's been eating on his own. He's been walking around. He's coherent. The aspect of he might not be able to make decisions, but he can talk. So he's not like in bed dying. He's walking around, getting up, sitting in the chair, eating food, watching TV. Like he's not, he's okay to a degree. So we get a FaceTime call. And they're like, we're doing it. We're putting him on the vent. And we're like, wait, what? And I'm like freaking out. I'm like coming in. I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? Why are you putting him on a vent? They're like, we need to do this now. And they're like freaking out. And I'm like, wait a second. Cause everything I had heard is the vent death sentence. I'm like, wait a second. What is his oxygen at? Like, what's going on? We can't deal with that right now. He needs it now. And I'm like, here's the thing is, I swear I can picture this. I'm looking at the monitor and okay, maybe this could have been the heart rate, which I doubt, but I swear it said like 84. And I swear that was his oxygen level. And I'm just like, it's 80. Like, why are we putting him on a vent? Oh, he needs it. If you don't do this right now, he will die.
I think I was already on the vent.
You weren't.
Oh, okay.
I could see you. No.
Oh, okay.
They said he will die. And then they hang up and I'm like, we're calling back. And the nurse comes on and goes, we can't do this right now. And my mom at that point is like, honey, what do you want to do? Like, this is, I don't know what to do. She goes, do you want to go on the vent? Get a thumbs up, because they put the fear of God that this is the only thing to save him.
And that's what they make you believe, that this is the only way. And that's not true.
And that's, so they, we don't even know what this is. They hang up on us. We're driving to the hospital. We pull up to the hospital. I'm barefoot. I run into the hospital ER and I'm like, I need to know what's going on. They said they're going to put him on a ventilator. And they're like, okay, just calm down. And they're like, okay, well, they said they were going to take my mom to go see him. At that point, we didn't even know if he was on the vent yet. We wait 2 hours. 2 hours of not knowing, is he on a ventilator? Is he not? The doctor finally comes out and tells us, this was the best choice. He was really struggling to breathe. But I have a very good track record. I don't sleep until they're off the vent. He's healthy. He's doing good. I feel good about it. Like, he felt good about it. So I said, okay, well, what do we do now? What do we look out for? And he was saying, there's something called FPO2, F as in Frank. That is the amount of oxygen they're blowing into you to help you oxygenate. And then SPO2 is basically how much, like the oximeter, like how much oxygen you're getting. And so they were telling us basically to get down to this certain level of how much the ventilator's pushing in, then we can start to try and get you off the ventilator. And so
by this time, has he finished his doses of remdesivir?
Yes.
Was anyone checking his creatinine, his BUN? Basically, was anyone checking his kidney functions?
We called 3 times that they were checking it, and I don't know for sure if they, because we were asked, aunt actually was telling me she was very against it, and I was like, I don't know.
She was against remdesivir,
and
how did she know about it?
I don't, she just said it's really bad on your kidneys. Mm-hmm. No, I just said, this is what we were told, and I'm going to be honest too, at the same exact time, we all got COVID from a family event that we went to. So my husband's family, we were all up there. Their mother, she does have some comorbidities, but she was fully vaccinated. She ended up at the hospital at the same time.
Did you say she was fully vaccinated? Because you cut out. Fully vaccinated. She got COVID and she got hospitalized, fully vaccinated.
Correct.
Okay, just want to point that out.
She didn't make it.
She didn't make it.
She died 5 days in. Never vented, just ended up morphine and let her fade.
That's very sad.
So, and that's been a hard thing for him because he, you know, was like, did I not do enough? And it was a nightmare. They fought and fought and fought. They wouldn't let him see her. I mean, it was a nightmare. So we were dealing with that at the same time. And we were both kind of passing back and forth, like, well, what do you think about this? He wanted, you know, he wanted the budesonide. He requested it. There's a guy from Texas, I think, that was talking about it.
Yep, there's a doctor from Texas. Yep.
And they said no. They said no. They wouldn't do anything. Not protocol.
They didn't even mention it to me. I had never heard of it.
And I didn't really, I think I mentioned it, but they said, I think at this point they said he was, it almost, I feel that it was too far past time to even have it help. So anyways, okay, sorry.
From all the frontline doctors I've interviewed, ivermectin can be used in every stage of COVID. Yeah. Budesonide, as far as I understand it, again, I'm not a physician, but as far as I'm understanding this, and you guys can check it out for yourself, and I encourage you to do so, it can be applied at just about every stage as well. Now, that information, you guys need to double check, but that's what I'm understanding. That's what I'm understanding.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like I said, I had him start it when he got off the ventilator. I wanted him to start using it.
So you said your husband was questioning that for his mom, you said?
It was my brother-in-law.
Your brother-in-law, for his mom. He was saying, should I put him? And then what happened when he questioned that? Like,
they said no. And then I think they eventually might have said yes, but they said they don't have any in stock and they didn't know how long it would take to get it. So that was the next thing. So that was all going on. The day my dad got put on a vent, my whole family came and we all, you know, cried and talked. Well, at that point, 3 days later, every single member of my family. So I was
the single one.
Yes.
After the hospital visit?
Well, not even the hospital visit, just after we all got together, somehow someone, I don't know, we all ended up with COVID. I didn't because I had it at the same time as him. So now everyone in my family has COVID. I'm the only healthy one. And now my dad's on a vent and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm the baby of the family. And I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out. And so my sisters, everybody, to the point where my up in Flagstaff, she gets down to, her husband's a firefighter and everything we've been through with my dad are like, okay, we have a better idea now what to do. He kept her at home and about, I think it was 72% oxygen, where that's at 72. And he said, okay, like we have to take her in. He takes her in. She waits seven. It was like 7 hours in the ER, or not, just in the hospital waiting to get a bed. They have her with a mask on and they have the oxygen on her. She finally gets into the room. I don't know how much to share it to agree, but at this point we had all the ivermectin. We had tons of it. And, so we knew what we were going to do. We had a plan and that was it. So she gets to the ER, they go, okay, well, we're on remdesivir, like all these things. And, her husband's on, said, hey, you cannot give her anything unless her husband's on the phone. Like there's no treatment, no nothing unless he's there. Like she can't make a decision on her own. And so they said, nope, this is what we're going to do. He get the paper from the FCC and they say, we want you to put her everything on this list. They said, okay. They said,
did the hospitals tell you that remdesivir failed in trials? Did they mention that to you?
No, so this is what happened.
Did they mention to you that George Soros patented remdesivir?
No, this is all stuff I've, at this point, I've watched Dr. Artis. I've done all the research on it. we know what we're not going to do. So when they say something about remdesivir, and he goes, absolutely not. And they go, well, wait, why? And he's like, have you looked at the studies? Do you do? And he like went off, and they're like,
you're about Randy?
Okay. Yeah. They're like, oh, okay. And so they started her on everything. They even said that they would give the ivermectin, but they had to have a prescription. She had to have a prescription. It was going to take us too long to get the prescription, and we didn't want to wait. And the other thing is, I guarantee you, even if the prescription said the right amount, the dosage, they weren't going to do that amount. And so we did what we needed to do, and she got her ivermectin.
How did you do what you needed to do? Did you sneak it in prison style, like get a goodie bag and you've stuffed it? See what I'm saying? It's like prison. Like, you know, prisoners get like snuck in stuff in prisons and jails. And like now you have to do that with medicine that won a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, it was put in a bag wrapped in an Arby's sandwich.
And 3 days later, she was out of the hospital.
She was out of the hospital. Double pneumonia. Same thing. 3 days later, she was out on supplemental oxygen.
Yeah, I think if they would have done that with me, I mean, it's all hypothetical, but I think I would have, they would have hit me right away with that. I think I wouldn't have went through the 72 ordeal, that day ordeal that I was in. So, but.
And I've talked to, I mean, I'm not kidding you. Like I said, I have people at least once or twice a week calling me like, what do I do? Another situation with another guy, they had to sneak him in the ivermectin. It took him he actually got all the way up to needing the CPAP. And then once we found out, he had stopped a day or two because he's foggy. He doesn't realize what he's doing. And then we actually asked, we bumped him up to the triple dose, the six, and then he was out within a couple of days after that. And here's the thing that makes me so angry is that every day they asked him about the remdesivir. Every day, like they were waiting for him to slip up so they could give it to him. He'd already been there a week. I talked to another family member. Down to 2 liters of oxygen. They were planning to release him the next day, and they started him on remdesivir. I said, get him off of that. I said, are you kidding me? He's getting released. Why would they be willing to give it to him? Like, there's no point. He's getting released a day or two. He's doing good. Oh, it just makes me so angry. But so, I mean, I've definitely, I know so much. So basically, okay, I'm going to bring it back to my dad because I know I have so much to share. It, that we want to try and get to like key points. Yes, remdesivir. I tell people, look, I'm not a doctor, but based off the research I've done, I would not have ever had my dad take it, my sister take it, but you do your research. And I would share with you where I'm getting my information and let you make your own decision because I am not a doctor. I'm just sharing my experience of what I went through with my dad and what I've seen from other people. And so, back to the, you know, my dad's now on a ventilator. Everyone in my family's sick. My sister then is in the hospital. She's out. She's, you know, doing better. My other sister almost had to go to the hospital. We kept her out because we were able to get her on the higher dose of the ivermectin from home. This is something people don't realize. I knew. So the whole time I was still a little nervous about ivermectin because of how much was saying it's horrible, it's gonna kill. And I was like, crap, I don't want to hurt my more. I was super nervous. I didn't know what to do. This is when I knew that God was leading me in this direction. We took my sister to urgent care, Valley Urgent Care up in here in Phoenix.
My other dog.
One of the other dog. And how ironic that she goes in, they say, you know, you have COVID, this and that. They go, we're starting a clinical trial on ivermectin. Would you like to try it?
That's a God thing.
And I said, okay, God, you're telling me that this is okay. This is something we need to do. However, this is what's happening with these clinical trials, with these people that these doctors, they're saying it's not working. They're giving the wrong dose. They didn't even check her weight. They're not looking at weight. And they were giving her like less than 2 milligrams per kilogram. And so of course they're do anything because it's not enough to do anything. So when they gave her that, I said, you're bumping it up to 4 milligrams per kilogram. And that's what she did. And it helped. So, so that's when I knew it was a God thing. And that's when I said, you know what? I know I need this for my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked the doctor about it. And at this point too, they, oh yeah, he's on D, vitamin D, zinc. And I'm like,
okay. They said that they put him on vitamin D and zinc.
He was on that. But when
that's
I asked,
good. That's good.
But they were on, it was like 500. It was very low dosage. So I said, I want to bump it up. And at first they wouldn't do it. And then they finally did. And I mean, it was a fight, like every single step of the way, like a nonstop fight. Like, come on, you know, to the point where, so he's now 5 days in on the ventilator, roughly around then. He had been sitting at only needing about 40, 50, 60% oxygen, wasn't doing too bad. So I'm thinking, okay, they're going to take him off. Then they start having trouble keeping him sedated. And they go, you know, was your dad an alcoholic? They asked him, was your dad ever a heavy drinker? And I'm like, no, like what? They're like, yeah, we're just having a really hard time sedating him. But we also have seen this with a lot of COVID. They just can't stay sedated. They keep, basically they're fighting through the sedation and trying to breathe on their own, and it's causing them to have problems. And I'm trying to breathe on his own. Does that mean he's like, maybe he needs, like, he's okay. They're like, oh no, not like if he gets off of this, he'll die. And I'm like, okay. So they ended up having to put him on a paralytic. So now he's basically paralyzed. And they would do it in just short increments, you know, 3 hours here, 3 hours there. And during this time, they were doing some sedation vacations, where basically they wake you up and they say, Bob, wiggle your toes, you know, do different things and respond to all of that, which is good. But once they get on the paralytic drip, no. So he was on a paralytic for a day or two, just here and there. And they said, then they finally were like, you know what? We have to just put him on a paralytic drip where he's just going to be paralyzed the whole time.
I can't imagine being a dad and that happening to me. I mean, that is very scary to me, thinking about them medically paralyzing me. I can't move. I can't talk. I can't do anything. And no one can be by his side. Nobody.
And they still at this point won't let us see them. We have no idea if they're taking care of them, what they're doing.
And I was prone the whole time.
I don't know if you're prone the whole time. You didn't get, so proning is a good thing to do. So in the beginning, when he first got in there, if you flip them on their stomach or their side, it helps open up their airways. And so that's a good thing for them just to do. So you weren't prone in the beginning for a while. They kept your back. It's hard when you're on a ventilator for them to prone you because you have all that stuff down your throat and they have to be careful of that. Okay, first thing, I forgot to mention this. Right after he gets on a ventilator, we get a call about an hour or two later, the doctor says, so after we did they did like an x-ray to make sure that the tube went in good. It looks like he has a collapsed lung. So we put a tube in to help blow that back up. So my opinion is if he was struggling to breathe, I think lung collapsed before they even put him on the ventilator. If they would have just put that tube in and checked that first, he would have been fine. He wouldn't have needed the ventilator. And you know why his lung ruptured? Is because they're pushing so much oxygen and that air into the lungs. It's thin in the lungs and all this air, and it's just basically popping.
Oh, we lost her. Let's get her back. Okay. Yeah, you know, you make a great point. You make a fantastic point. Your lungs can only take so much oxygen. It's only meant to take so much oxygen.
That's what's going on.
Oh, wow. No. Yeah, one time.
Say that again. You cut out.
He ended up, he was on 100% oxygen at one point. But yeah, I think that thins out the lungs. Then they do, and it's not just like a little bit of air. It's blowing. A high flow is like, because there's also something called the PEEP is the pressure that they're pushing into the lungs as well. So there's a lot of numbers and a lot of things that go involved with it. But so he tells me his lung collapses and that now that the tube's in, it's helping. So I'm like, okay, thinking he's going to get off of it in a couple of days, but then everything gets worse. He starts getting put on a paralytic drip and then this happens and then that happens. And by the time he was on the paralytic drip for about 3 days, it's now August 17th so he's been on the ventilator.
For how many days you cut out?
Sorry, he was on the ventilator 10 days at this point. So 10 days he's on the ventilator. And then I talked to one of the doctors, and at this point, how this is, I swear God was with me every step of, like every step of the way. Are you familiar with Ralph Lurigo? Mm-mm. Okay, Ralph Lurigo, one of the top lawyers in New York that has been fighting all these cases to get people court order to ivermectin.
Oh, he's the one. Okay. I know of his work. I just didn't know the name.
So somehow I got connected actually from Michelle, a friend of mine. Her sister somehow got in touch with him. I got connected with him and we were able to hire him on as a lawyer. So we did hire him. So I'm talking to the doctor and he's just saying, you know, there's just nothing much we can do at this point. He's just, it's not looking good. And I'm like, okay, well then I need to have a face-to-face and we need to figure out a plan. And he goes, well, I might be able to do tomorrow. I'm like, your father's going to die, but you want me to wait till tomorrow to have a conversation about it? He goes, well, he's not going to die right now. He's on life support. I'm like, okay.
Because that makes it better. Thanks.
So very, very, and I mean, I recorded a lot of these calls because I like to go and see what else I need to do. But so, and then I go, well, I want him on a 2000 of vitamin C. I was like kind of going through what I wanted. And he literally fought with me. I said, I want him on 200 or 2000 vitamin C. And he goes, it's not going to do anything. And I said, is it going to hurt him? He goes, it's not going to do anything. Is it going to hurt him? It's not going to do anything. I said, look, I'm not asking you if it's going to do anything. I understand you don't think it's going to do anything. Will it hurt him? Probably not. I said, then do it. And he said, okay. Like he was fighting me. And then I talked about ivermectin. He's like, I absolutely not. And I was trying to explain why I wanted to do it. Like, nope, won't do it. Won't do it. Won't do it. And then he had the audacity to say, you know what? We had a treatment for this called the vaccine, but your dad chose not to get it. And that was his choice. And
wow.
I lost it. I said,
wow. What? Okay. I'm losing my mind right now. Okay. You're not even my dad. And I'm losing my mind right now because I thought doctors are to do no harm. And that makes me think they didn't want to help you because you didn't choose to get the shot. That's what, when he said that, like, that's what triggers my mind. Because you can't tell me he doesn't know about a drug called budesonide. If I freaking know about budesonide, you can't tell me he doesn't know about budesonide. You can't tell me he doesn't know about ivermectin that's been around since the 70s that won a Nobel Peace Prize. You can't tell me he doesn't know about that. You can't tell me he doesn't know about zinc, vitamin D, vitamin C. I'm no physician. He's been a physician, you know, you can't tell me he doesn't know these things. Yeah, he won't give it to you because the CDC and the FDA say this is not the protocol. Yet he's probably seen many patients go down this path. You would think the doctors would be like, obviously this isn't working. Obviously these protocols aren't working. I mean, did anyone tell you that you have patient rights? Did anyone tell you about that?
No. No.
Did anyone tell you have a right to try under patient rights?
I told them that and they still denied it. They said, no, basically, no, you don't.
Did you know you could fire your doctor?
I did. I did know that. But at that point, it was scary. This was the first time we were having to deal with it.
No, I understand that. I do 100% get that with my dad, with my best friend. Like, I totally get the scary thing. And that's what I'm trying to do on this show is take the fear out of patients who are seeing their loved ones deteriorate because your dad is so freaking lucky to be alive right now. He had a fighter for a daughter and he is so lucky. And we don't want anybody listening on this program to get to where your dad was on the verge of death. And the doctors are scaring you saying he's going to die if we don't do this, but everything they were telling you to do was not in the best
interest for him at all.
Mm-mm. And being separated is the worst of it all, because if you were sitting right there next to him, the likelihood of you getting the desires for your father is a lot higher than on the phone. It's easy to say no on the phone. It's easy to ignore those people on the phone, but when they're right in front of your face, it's hard to say. And that's what makes me think about these protocols with COVID, that I think it's part of the plan because if they can separate you from your loved one, then it's easier for them to get their agenda, which is depopulation. Maybe those physicians at the hospital don't think that way, because I still think there's a lot blinded in this fog and this trance that the CDC and the FDA are really great organizations.
Right.
But that separation that comes from someone, I think it's part of the depopulation plan, because it's not in the best interest of the patient at all. So then what happened? Give them vitamin C, give them D. What then what happened after that?
We could do a meeting at 7 o'clock the next morning. And so that night, I am not, I went through the FLCCC, the IMATH protocol. I found every single drug they want them on. And I found clinical trials showing why. Because I didn't want to go in there and say, well, my brother's sister friend said, so I had a notebook this thick and I printed out every single, like, okay, one of them, the vitamin C, why the high dose? The vitamin D, the zinc, thymine. I printed out why thymine, the high cholesterol, like the trichlor or the trichlor or Lipitor or whatever. I went through and printed out everything. And then also a lot of people don't know this, that a lot of COVID can register, it can kind of register in the gut. And so health and like nutrition is an extremely important thing. So I actually watched a podcast about this lady that both parents in the beginning of the pandemic ended up in the ER on ventilators. And at that point, they were kind of like, you know what to do. And they did the hydrochloroquine and it helped her. But she put her on something called Liquid Hope. It's an all organic tube feeding. And what they were giving him was crap full of GMO, sardine, just crap. And so I showed the research on that. So I went into that meeting and I had, it was just me in there and then the doctor and then a nurse. And then I had my dad's brother, my brother and sister and her husband on a like a FaceTime call so we could all kind of go through what's going to happen. So we start the meeting, and this is the part that makes me so angry, is the first doctor we talked to when he got put on the ventilator was like, you know, we've had great research, you know, I've had good luck with this, blah 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 blah. And then now this guy is saying basically, well, we told you when he got put on the ventilator, he really only had a 10% chance of making it. I said, no one ever told us that. Not even close. Nothing ever was said about that. And so he goes through his spiel of like, it's just not looking good. He's on 100% oxygen right now. I don't have a magic button to help him, blah, 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 blah. Still trying to get the ivermectin, not working. But he agrees to go on the higher dose of vitamin C. He agreed to put him on the Lipitor. I think it's either Lipitor or Trichlor. He agreed he hadn't had him on thymine. He was at least on a blood thinner, which is good. But he agreed to put him on all of these things. So I was like, okay, but again, no ivermectin. So that was at 7 o'clock in the morning. We leave, we go home at about 12. We get a call from the nurse that says, I think you should come down and say your goodbyes. I don't think he's going to make it. I'm like, oh, okay. So me and my mom drive down, get met by
Security.
well, met by security and then met by the doctor. And the doctor goes, well, I probably, we, she should have called and talked to me first. Come in the room and let's talk about this. So we go in the room and he, look, yes, we can let you go see your father. It's looking good. But you have to sign a DNR. I'm like, and for people, DNR, do not
Do not
resuscitate.
resuscitate.
I go, why would I sign a DNR to go see my father?
Who's dying?
They go, well, because if he's full code, and you're up there and something happens and we have to, you know, do whatever, there could be blood or something could splatter on you. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? And I said, okay, so let me just get this straight. Yes, he's on 100% oxygen, but he's oxygenating at like 93, 94. His kidneys, his liver, everything else is good. It's just his lungs, correct? He goes, well, yeah, he's on 100% oxygen. but he's still getting the oxygen. And he was trying to say like, oh, well, you don't know about brain damage and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And like, look, he's not dropped down to 60, 50% oxygen. He's not going to have brain damage because he's not lack of oxygen to the brain. What you're trying to tell me is I said, look, I'm not signing a DNR. I said, if he gets down to 40% oxygen, then maybe I'll reconsider. But there's no way I'm signing a DNR. And he goes, well, that's your choice. And so we basically had to turn around and leave and let us see him. So we never got to see him. But immediately at that point, I felt led and very strong that I felt like we needed a prayer circle. So I reached out to a bunch of family members and friends, and we, about 3 o'clock that day, we got about 15 of us. We went to the hospital, we played songs and worshiped and prayed. And that's what we did. And then I talked to the doctor, the nurse that night. They said, the nurse goes, oh, he has really bad diarrhea. That's normally the first sign that organs are failing because, you know, the body will try and protect the other things first. And he was also storing a lot of CO2. He wasn't expelling it, and that there's nothing they can do for that. So then I start researching more about that. Well, then the next day they were like, well, you know, he's got down to, you know, 95% oxygen or 90% oxygen, but still like it's really bad. And at that point, we had started to draw up paperwork for the lawyer. But the hardest thing was we needed a local attorney to be able, because he's in New York, we need a local attorney to be able to file the emergency injunction. And I called like 50 lawyers trying to get someone to help us with that. So I tell the doctor, like, look, I want him on ivermectin. I gave you all the paperwork. You have today to say whether you're going to administer it. If not, then our lawyer is going to get involved. And so, he got back to me and he said, we just can't do it. And I go, why? I said, please explain. You're telling me he's going to die, like that there's no other options. Why can't we try this? And this was his reason. He said it could affect his white blood cell. And I said, you're telling me he's going to die and it could affect. I said, it's not a cancer. I'm like, you give it to him for a day. If it affects white blood cells, you take them off. Like, it's not like, why not try? And he just says, we can't do it. Not at all. So that's when we got the lawyer involved, and but then every day he got started on all those other things. Every day he kept getting better and better and better and better till I think it was on a week or two after that, they had been able to take him off the paralytic drip. They were able to start weaning him off the sedation, but they were having trouble getting him off the sedation. And then that's when the doctor was like, you know, I think it's going to be a really hard to get him off later. I think we need to do a tracheotomy where they, you know, cut a hole and they do the tube in the throat.
I had a friend that happened to him, and that really saved his life.
I was nervous about it, and I didn't know. I did a lot of research, and based on what I saw, that was going to be the best option.
I agree.
So we said, okay, they had to wait a little bit. He was, his hemoglobin was dropping because he ended up having a hematoma. And so he had a big hematoma he still has it actually in the side, which wasn't like a blood. It's a compiled blood, but it's not really, I don't know if it's considered a blood clot, but they did the tracheotomy. And then the next day or two, they did a GJ tube in his stomach for two. Good. Because he had, you know, the little tube down his throat for feeding and hard to talk. And so anyways, we finally get him on all of that. And then we're, you know, planning, we went and did some research on getting him to a rehab clinic where they work on getting a ventilator. So we had planned in the next day or two to get him moved over there. But the hospital wanted to wait to make sure his hemoglobin numbers were okay for transferring him. But at that point, he was awake. And so we were FaceTiming him. And I asked him, I said, hey, you know, how are they treating you? And at first he was like, you know, good. And then I guess the nurse left the room. And then I, you know, so how are things? And he basically was like, get me out of here.
I couldn't talk at all.
But I was like, how are they treating you? Shaking his head no frantically. I'm like, what's going on? Like, he can't talk. But I said, well, we're working on getting somewhere else. And he kept mouthing now. And so I'm like, we don't know. We're not there. They still at this point won't let us see him. It's been over 21 days. Apparently there's supposed to be something after 21 days that you could see your loved one. They still weren't doing it. And so at least at this new place, they would let us see him. And so after 21 days or after he said now, we got it. My mom and we basically got him moved that night.
They didn't want to move me for 3 more days because they wanted to give me blood thinners. And my wife said, no blood thinners. I want him out of there today. And she fought him and fought him. And finally, 11 o'clock at night, they let me go and took me over to another hospital.
So they said he was going to get moved at 9. And so I went to the hospital at 9 because I was like, maybe I'll get to see him as he's going into the ambulance. Because at this point, I think it's been like 35 days since we've seen him. And so they finally about 11:30, they come and I talk to the ambulance driver, paramedic. And I say, can I wait here until he comes out? And they said, yeah. So they brought him out and I see him. I got to hold his hand and he doesn't remember any of it, but
I don't understand why I was so adamant about getting out of that hospital. Something inside of me said, I got to get out of here.
But he doesn't know.
But I knew I had to move. They're going to kill me. I told her.
They're going to kill me. And there is ICU delirium being on all those drugs. I mean, so there's things that could be happening. But again, we just knew he needed to be out. So he got put.
I will say this. I when I was pregnant, I was hospitalized during my pregnancy. And I was bedridden. I was not allowed to leave my bed except for 30 minutes a day, or get out of my room. And after, and people did come visit me. It was before COVID, but it wasn't like I had visitors all the time, but I did have some. But after a while, the walls close in on you. And I was hospitalized for at least a month, month and a half. And I delivered my baby, got out of the hospital, but had to go back because I had pneumonia. Because for some reason, when I deliver babies, my fluid goes to my lungs. That's how the doctor described it. He's like, your bodies do different things. And for me, it just happened like that extra fluid from pregnancy goes into my lungs. I started hearing things and seeing things that weren't even existing. And I called my husband and I said, I need out of here right now. I had the same thing. However, I was cognizant, like I knew what was going on, but I think it was just that delirium of being in a room for so long. And I had sometimes visitors, but not that often, but I can't imagine you having no visitors. You know what I mean? I can understand that delirium. However, I think that also was maybe a God thing that was telling you, hey, this isn't a safe place for you to be. And maybe God was just like speaking into you somehow.
And even thinking about it, waking up, last thing you remember, you don't remember the FaceTime call with us, do you? Last thing you remember being, just in the hospital, and then you're waking up on all these machines, like what the heck is going on, and not having any memory of the, what happened. And so, so we got him moved, and at that new place, you could have visitors between 10 and 6 p.m. And so the whole time he was there, my mom and me rotated every other day, and we were there for the full
30 days,
eight hours a day.
And my daughter, other daughters, son.
Yeah. We would try.
And to I rotate. Improved immensely. It took me a couple of weeks, but after a couple of weeks, I started accelerating in my health.
On September 2nd, he moved to the long-term acute care. And then on the 21st, he actually was able to get off the ventilator. So, he had to relearn how to
talk.
I mean, he didn't communicate with anybody, talk for 45 days, wasn't it? Like 45 days of no talking?
No talking.
So we, they let him they put a cap in the trach and he got to talk for the first time. And he got to, say, I love you guys. You know, just how amazing it is to be able, like, you don't realize that not being able to communicate with somebody is hard, you know, an iPad and he could draw and do things like that, but it was tough.
We improvised. And I got to say, one thing that was disturbing is I felt like a second-class citizen in there, because everybody asked me, why did you get vaccinated? The nurses. And I said, it's my choice. I didn't. No, I didn't really explain myself. It's none of their damn business, but that was a constant question.
And it's frustrating because they do treat people differently when they're not. I 100% agree with that. And then the audacity that some of these doctors are basically saying, like, right away, he needs to go get vaccinated. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know how much natural immunity he's going to have now? Like, almost scared. Even at the last, so after the long-term acute care, he went to one more rehab where they really do like 4 hours a day of really like physical therapy. Even there, they were trying to argue with him that natural immunity wasn't going to protect
him. You got to get vaccinated. When you leave here, get vaccinated.
Like I said, Dad. And then they even started to scare him where he was thinking like, maybe I need to. Like, not
those who were getting vaccinated, if you listen to some of these frontline doctors, it's not healthy for you. Like, you have, there's adverse events. If you've had COVID and then get the shot, it's not healthy. They say, do not do that. And Dr. Peter McCullough, he is a strong advocate for that immunity, that natural immunity. He will tell you have the strongest immunity there is. And he's a cardiologist. And so I'm like,
well, and that's, luckily we got one good doctor at this one, when he was getting off the ventilator, and he flat out said, like, first, this is at the long-term acute care. They all, there were two doctors. They said that they would give him the ivermectin because we still had it and we still thought it would be beneficial. I said, I have the prescription. I have everything we need. And they said, okay. And then, he said, you might have to bring it in because we might not be able to fill it here or whatever. The CEO said no. The CEO said, absolutely, we will not do it. And at that point, we did do the lawsuit and we did actually go to trial or court, or we met with the judge. But he, at this point, was almost off the vent. By the time everything went through, that the judge was basically like, he's doing good. Pretty soon, he's just going to be able to take it on his own if he wants to. But it was at that point, we'd already paid for everything. We just, at that, we're hoping maybe it would help somebody else to just continue and just show that this is important and that something that they need to continue to do. So we still did that. But this doctor actually, like, you know, when I got sick, my whole family, we all got the hydrochloroquine and it did great. But he said it was political. He said that they have a stronghold on him and that he can't make choice. Like, he can't do it. He said, I didn't want to get vaccinated. I know natural immunity does more than the vaccine, but I can't, I had to get it to work.
That's the thing. That's a lie. He could have had his own practice. You know what I mean?
Like, well, yeah, it's hard, though. It's not easy, and people want easy.
That's the truth. But the lie is, you have no choice. You do have a choice. We all have to stand up and say no, because right. The more we give in and do the easy thing, the more danger there is for people. And if you look at the VAERS report, over 18,000 deaths now. 18,000 deaths. Project Veritas, when they were looking at the Johnson & Johnson people, there was a clip in there. I don't know if anyone saw it, but it's on one of my programs. 200,000 people have died from that shot. Wow, but you won't hear about that. It was a clip that I saw on Project Veritas, and it was on one of my shows. I caught that. I'm like, did you guys just hear what the scientist said from Johnson & Johnson? Because the VAERS report only gives you 1%. We found out from Jody O'Malley that hospitals are not sharing with VAERS the adverse events. They're just not doing it. Whether it's convenience or they don't believe it or they don't want to do it, I don't know, but they're not doing it. So there's a far greater death rate than even the VAERS report was saying. But even 18 freaking thousand is a lot of deaths. And right. That's not even including the adverse events that people are experiencing. So don't tell me you don't have a choice. You always have a choice. And as a doctor, I would encourage you to start your own practice. We need freedom doctors. We need freedom hospitals. We need freedom clinics where people have the autonomy to make their medical decisions for themselves. and we need the doctors to be able to respect those medical decisions. I'm not always going to like what you do, and you're not always going to like what I do, but we should have that respect for one another. That's what I think.
You know, if Tara wouldn't have stepped up, I would have died. And that's with any family. Somebody has to step up because
And
I
that's
couldn't make those decisions. There's no way. And they would have let me die. I don't think they did on purpose, but it would have been easier for them to.
they put you on a vent and they leave you. And if you don't have someone every day advocating, I mean, I called 3 times. I called in the morning, I called afternoon, so I called the AM nurse twice and then the night nurse. And then also, they decided they would no longer talk to me.
Who said that you cut out? Who wouldn't talk to you anymore?
The nurses weren't allowed to talk to me. So
Whose
basically,
orders? Who told them that they can't talk to you?
the hospital, I don't know.
See, at that point, that's when we need to get like an attorney involved or something.
Even took my mom is power of attorney, and then I'm the second one. But she went and we printed out the HIPAA that says I'm allowed to have any, information, and they still said no. I even had one nurse have the audacity to tell me your dad, because I said we're, going to do the lawsuit. Then she goes, your dad is just now starting to do better. If you give him the ivermectin, it's going to kill him. And I said, do you know much about ivermectin? She goes, no, but the doctors don't want to do it and you should trust them. And I said, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And you don't know anything about ivermectin. So, I don't agree with that. So, but yeah, they were no longer, I had just pretended to be my mom because I'm like, I mean, at this point, she's sick. Everybody's not doing good. Like, I am the one. I mean, I called 3 times a day. I'm not kidding. Every time I called, my heart dropped because I was so scared to know what, I mean, I printed out a chart. I had, FPO, I had all these numbers that I could track, but you have to stay involved. You have to have a plan and you have to know what you are and aren't want when you get in because nobody thinks this is going to happen. And I mean, I have a hard time saying to tell anybody, no, don't go to the hospital at all. Because I do feel like there is a time and a place. And if you don't have supplemental oxygen somehow, some way, there might be a need for it, but you need.
I want to tell you that you can get a prescription for that and have it handy in case you do need supplemental oxygen, because a lot of these doctors are telling you at all costs, if you can avoid the hospital, do. That's why the prophylactic is the best option for people, because if they can treat it early or if they can prevent it because they're already giving their body what they need, then you avoid all this altogether. What would be your advice as far as someone listening right now? How would you direct them? What would you give them as advice for this whole thing? Like, what would you share out of your experience with them?
Have a plan. Have a plan in place. Start your prophylactics now. A lot of people don't get your prescription of ivermectin. Like whether you think it's going to happen or not, have it available
I
because
have it just in case.
you don't want to be scrounging around trying to get it when all of a sudden things get bad. So have your ivermectin. Make your choice whether or not you think remdesivir is beneficial. I mean, I 100% know. But have that in mind of knowing what you're going to do if something happens and they do have to go to the hospital. And basically, a patient advocate, they actually do have patient advocates that, like, I was the patient advocate, but they have people locally that you can hire to speak on your behalf and make sure things get done because they don't talk to you. They don't, I mean, it's like hard to get in, tell you what's going on. But yeah, have a plan. Be prepared. Don't think it's not going to happen to you. It could, but just be prepared with whatever you need, whether it's the medications, do it prophylactically, have everything available to you. Just be informed. I was trying to think if there was anything else, medical records, if they hospital, I requested, they had to send me medical records every day. I wanted to keep track of what was going on. You need to let, if they're already in the hospital, they need to know you're not going anywhere. That this isn't going to be someone that just can sit by and you guys just rest assured, like, oh, they're just going to lay there and you got to be involved every way. And you need to, this isn't the day and age where you can just trust the doctors. Back in the day, you went in, you're like, all right, the doctor knows best. No, I'm sorry. They don't. They're not going to love your loved one as you do. They're not going to fight for your loved one as you would. you got to be involved and you've got to know what's going on. And yes, I would push off the hospital as much as possible. If you can get a prescription of oxygen, if you start to go bad, if you can have those prophylactics, be prepared, try to prevent yourself from having to go to the hospital. I think it's beneficial. But if you do have to go, like my sister and some of these other family members that ended up at the hospital, they declined the remdesivir. They got started on the protocol, the IMAP, and they were out, you know, in a couple of days.
They declined the remdesivir, and then they started what protocol?
The IMAP from the FLCCC.
FLCCC, yeah, okay.
Start that, and I've had about 4 people that have ended up having to go to the hospital that started that, and they ended up being able to get out. And
that's awesome. I'm so happy that your dad is sitting right next to you, and you can hug him, and you can give him a kiss, and you can celebrate the holidays with them, because you could be like me. And I don't want you to be like me. I want you to be like Sarah. So be like Sarah and fight every inch you can. And I mean, I tried my best, but I didn't know what was going on with my dad. And it wasn't COVID. So we all did our best to fight for our dad, but we didn't win on that one. So be like Sarah and do everything you can to protect your dad. Bob, do you have any last final words for anyone listening on the program?
I'm doing good now. I'm still going to therapy. I'm going to strength training 3 days a week, and I'm going to physical therapy two times a week. It's going to be a long haul, probably a year, but you know, I just believe that the power of prayer saved my life. And of course, Sarah and my wife getting involved, and I'm very grateful. And I think I never asked why I went through this, but my thing is, if it helps one other person, it's all worth it.
Right.
And I'm not bitter.
He doesn't regret not getting the vaccine.
Yeah, I don't regret. I'm never going to get the vaccine. I wasn't going to do it anyway. But yeah.
I don't even want to call it that on the show, because it really isn't a vaccine. It's experimental gene therapy. You know what I mean? Like, I think we need to call a spade, and we're so used to calling it a vaccine so that we're accepting of something that's not a vaccine. It's an experimental gene therapy, and people really need to wrap their minds around what it actually is that they're putting in their body. Not to correct you, but it's just something I'm trying to train my mouth. You know, I'm trying to train myself, because we always hear the vaccine, and I just think we need to call a spade and call it for what it is, an experiment of your genes.
I'm glad Sarah and I are on, because I think I really hope this gives people hope that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And maybe I'm just lucky or fortunate, but a lot of things had to happen to get me to where I am. And it doesn't work for everybody, but it's at least a good plan to do.
And they are telling, I mean, every family member I've talked to that has loved ones on Vince, they're telling them they're not going to make it. And I said, just keep, don't give up yet. Don't give up. Do not sign that DNR. Like, you need to find for yourself the level. Like, if it's, you know, they get down to 45% oxygen, you know, when is it your cutting point, like your cutoff point? But don't give up. And you know what? I'm not the only one that they've been telling them about the DNR. I've heard several other people say they told me I had to sign a DNR.
That's terrible. So,
don't sign the DNR. Like, don't do it. Like, don't stop fighting. Like, find your point where, like, I knew if my dad got too much, you know, low on the oxygen, if he was going to be brain dead or anything. And they might even, they try to trick you. They
yeah,
do.
They do. Mm-hmm.
No, they might. We won't know how his activity is. There's, you know, he could be on oxygen the rest of his life. He's a month and a half out. He's not on oxygen anymore. He still gets short of breath, and he still carries, like, he'll take his portable one if he's trip or somewhere. He's walking around, he's doing stuff. Like, it's not going to be a life sentence. Your life's not over. Like,
and there are a lot of good doctors and nurses. They helped me get back on my feet. I had a great respiratory
therapist.
Yeah. He got me breathing. So people, there are good nurses and doctors.
Sure, there are. Of course.
But there was a couple that I don't know if they cared, or they just,
like I said, there's a fog right now. There's like a haze over the eyes and the ears. And I think one day they're going to wake up and realize, you know, that they've been scammed too. But I want the people to understand that there is hope and there's a prescription out there and there's protocols out there that are life-saving protocols, and I want people to know about it. That's why I thought it was important to have you on the show, because of your daughter investigating, finding out these protocols, it most likely saved your life. And so my hope, my show today is about hope. It's about encouragement. It's about taking that fear. I want to remove fear. This whole show, this whole year has been nothing but fear driven. Not my show, but the whole year has been fear driven. And I'm trying to break the fear, break the fear, break the fear. Because I do know what it's like to sit on the patient side. I do. I do know what it's like. And I do know the fear that goes into it. And I want to break that fear so you aren't like me and Sarah hearing the worst and thinking the worst, but actually they could get better. So get a hold of drstellamd.com, get your ivermectin, get your Covivites, use promo code Amber May, save some money there. Hey, I have a friend in tax incentive agency. All the links are in the description. She helped a business owner get $134,000 with government money that was set aside specifically for businesses. So if you're a business owner and you could use some extra funds, hey, get a hold of my friend. The link is in the description. See if she can help you get some money that the government already set aside, just waiting for you to take advantage of that. Hey, I want you to remember, go on my website. If you are an employer and you don't want the, and you are not requiring the jab, please message me so I can put that on my website. If you want to work with me, come and see my website. Contact me there. I have merch. I have merch you need to check out. Whatever's pure, whatever's right, whatever's noble, think on these things and fight like a domestic terrorist.